Welcome to the Fun Show.
I'm Kelly Cree.
I am Jessica Mullen.
And this is your hour of fun.
And I didn't even eat an edible before this. This is a free episode, just so you know.
Okay.
So leave all your private thoughts for the next one.
I don't really like to do that.
Have private thoughts.
Well, no thought is private.
True. I was reading in Byron Katie that she said, there's no stressful thought that is new and they've all been thought before.
Yeah, I'm reading Neville Goddard and he said something similar, which is everything has already been created.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I wanted to talk about
our icecapades.
I was going to say the most important thing to me right now is our acquisition.
Today we became art collectors.
Yes. Well, no, not today.
We've collected art in the past, but never on this scale.
And I attribute it fully to the amount of energetic attention I've been giving art lately.
Yeah.
Thinking about art, talking about art, reading about art, and I feel so filled up from just all of that artistic energy in my life. And we leave the house once is all it takes.
First I wanted to say that I agree about the giving it the energetic attention and spending all this energy on thinking about art, talking about art, making art. It is giving me a reason to live.
Right. I know. It's making me definitely feel more enlivened and, like, excited about my life. And, like, I have something to look forward to. I do like getting up. I mean, I look forward to getting up and stuff. But, like, it just makes me feel very much a lust for life.
Yeah. Like, no matter what else, you can still fling some paint at a board. And that's right. So fun.
Right. And just like we've been talking about, I think the past couple weeks, just like the idea or the concept being born again within our minds that, yes, we are artists and we are allowed to live just for the sake of making art and we can let the rest go. And that's like, to me, that is God, you know, that's like what we're always saying, like the feeling of letting go or releasing everything to life and not trying to control anything would be a way that I would describe the feeling of the God self. Mm-hmm. As God, because you trust everything.
Right.
And it makes me feel that feeling. I could just make art and that's it.
And all the work that I was doing previous to our reawakening, I now see it with fresh eyes. Like my videos, I now am looking at more as art, and like it just is such a permission slip to be more creative, be less like stuck in patterns and try new things.
Yes. And like you said, look at everything as art. Like I've even been thinking about like even our chores and our life design is our art. The way that we have designed our life to be to operate so smoothly is an art.
I agree. Not everyone can do laundry every single day of their lives.
I know. I barely can. So we leave the house once, which is like just a whole nother miracle in itself, because we had to go to the dentist yesterday. We got to go to the dentist to get our teeth cleaned, and which is such a privilege to get to do. And we're so blessed that we can even afford to go and pay to get our teeth cleaned. And so we've had this appointment, you know, for 6 months since our last cleaning.
And I'm not the type to go every 6 months. I think going to the dentist once a year. I mean, that was my past belief, that once a year, once every 3 years.
6 years.
Once a decade.
Right. Once a lifetime.
I've never been into like keeping it up because I thought it was a scam. But now that we've been taking better care of our teeth, I got the best compliment from my hygienist, who said, now that she's talking to the dentist, saying, well, she had some issues a year ago, but she's been using the mouthwash twice a day for a whole year, and now her teeth are stable. I've never heard that for teeth, that your teeth can be stable and not about to crumble out of your head.
So anyway, we've had the appointment for 6 months, and the weather has been complete trash for a month. Like, very cold, very snowy every day, just not sunny ever. Well, it had been a little sunny, but anyway, it's like, it just so happens this day we have to go to the dentist that's already been planned forever. It was like the warmest day we've had in months.
It got above 50.
And it was sunny, and before we left, we joked about canceling it because it was like, we really didn't need it. Like, I don't know. It's kind of like the type of thing you do when you have insurance and you have to like use it up or something,
right?
You know, like, right. It's really not necessary, but whatever. I mean, it's nice to keep it up, like you said. So, it just so happened to be the nicest day ever, and we got to have fun and go do something, which is so rare.
And yeah, when we were leaving the house, I was like, not depressed, but like not in a great mood, because I'm like, being in the house so much, I get stuck in these freaky thought patterns of like, you know, thinking I'm separate from the world, separate from other people, feeling not threatened, but like just leaving the house, like feeling like I'm gonna start a fight with every person or car that crosses my path, like just feeling so irritable when we left. Just from being cooped up, like.
But we decided we weren't going to cancel it because it was sunny and it was like the first sunny day.
Yeah, it was going to get us out of the house and I was going to take advantage.
And then we got to, after the dentist, we got to go get some takeout, which is another rarity for us. And it was actually warm, so we could eat it outside, like, especially in the winter, like, we're gonna walk to pick up some food and then it's gonna get cold instantly. Like, we're not gonna go and walk some food home when it's 9 degrees, and then what are you gonna heat it back up when you get home? Like, it's just not the thing,
right? Or even like when we were eating that Kringle outside when we had the fire, like, I had to eat it so fast because it was so cold to have my hands out of gloves. Like, you just can't.
I know. We didn't get to savor the Kringle. That was a huge disappointment. So anyway, we got to eat outside and it was so awesome. And so we go to this restaurant and we ordered our food, cheese fries and cheesecake and a brownie. And we're waiting for our food. And we're just looking around because they have all this stuff on the walls. It's called larder, if anyone in Cleveland or nearby wants to check out pretty much one of the best restaurants in Cleveland.
It's the one that we probably go to the most.
It might be the only or maybe one of a handful. Well, Aladdin's is good, but like where I actually think the food is good, you know?
Very high quality, yeah.
So anyway, larder.
Well, you think that about the desserts, but well,
the cheese fries were awesome.
Yeah, they were. They also do a lot of weird stuff like pickled vegetables.
That I can't speak to, but it's just not my palate. It's just me. My palate isn't there. I know our friend loves that stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway, looking around, they have all this stuff on the walls. We're like, do-do-do. And I look over. I'm like, wait a second. I'm like, because they have all this stuff everywhere because it's like, first of all, pandemic. So they don't, like they have all their tables pushed to the side, and then they have all these shelves and shit like in the main area with like stuff on them, and then there's like all these kitchen tools on this bench and stuff.
Yeah, like they were just getting some new appliances and they hadn't unboxed them right yet.
Or maybe did they put that stuff there so no one would sit there?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
They're like, I don't know, let's just take some stuff out of the storeroom and just put on these benches so people don't stay here and try to eat.
That makes sense.
So anyway, it's like cluttered, and the art is hung like kind of on top of some other frames or something. Like
the art is hung so haphazardly.
Like, which it was very, I don't know, appropriate for the work.
Yeah, like when we walked in, I didn't even know it was art because it just looks like the place looks really rustic. And then this art is also rustic, emphasis on rust. It's just,
it's so beautiful.
It's, it doesn't instantly strike you as art because it's not representational. It's not colorful, really. But the right when we walked in, I looked over there and I just couldn't stop looking at this one piece. Like, what is this? Why is this here? Is this, does this have to do with meat?
Because it's a deli.
Yeah, like I thought it had something to do with the food. I didn't think it was art right away, but I did look at it over and over. And I eventually pieced it together that, yes, this is art hanging on the wall. And intermixed with weird appliances and like antique signs.
Right. So yeah, so I didn't notice it until I'm just like standing around waiting for the food, and I look over and I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, where did this all of a sudden, and there's just like this amazing abstract art in the middle of larder on top of some other frames behind kitchen a food processor. Yeah. Like,
yeah, at first I was more interested in trying to figure out. It looked like a dishwasher, like a one-level dishwasher that you put shrink-wrapped meat into for freezing or storage. It was a weird appliance. And, like, the art was dusty. How long had it been there and we didn't notice it?
Well, we haven't been in there in over a year.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, pandy times and everything, we haven't gone in there.
Yeah, I guess we only tried once and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Okay.
He did say it had been hanging there a while.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm not even going to try to describe the art to you. Oh my God, my phone is ringing.
You can look at my Instagram, Jessica Mullen, if you want to see what the art looks like.
Yes. Good idea. Good idea.
And go ahead. I forgot what I was going to say.
we're looking at the art and we're like, wow, this is really good. Like, I'm super captivated by it. And especially just because I've been reading my art history book, Ninth Street Women. And so my mindset is very much in
looking for
it. Yeah. And also it was like, it's reminiscent of some of the artists of that abstract expressionist era.
Yeah, just the day before we were looking at, what's the artist's name?
Rauschenberg.
Assemblage.
Joseph Cornell.
I don't remember. But we were looking at something similar, right?
Right. We were looking probably at the Rauschenbergs.
That were kind of like diorama type stuff.
The dioramas would be the Joseph Cornells.
Okay.
And the more, like, larger assemblage pieces were the Rauschenbergs.
So we were just looking at assemblage art.
Right. And this work is very much like both of those artists.
Yes.
And so we were just really struck by the work, and we were asking at the counter, like, the woman working the counter was talking to someone else. I'm like, excuse me, who made that art? She's like,
I think his name's Ollie.
She didn't really know. So when we got home, I asked on Instagram and I tagged Larder, and someone there must have known, and they put me in touch with Ollie. And so, and then he happens to work at this other place, Ohio City Provisions, that we frequent, or we used to frequent. And I don't know. I think it's just so quaint. Like, I love that aspect of Cleveland. It's got that... Again, it's, like, very reminiscent of the social scene that I've been reading about in New York in the, you know, 1940s, 1950s. Just, like, everyone knows each other. The artists all know each other. And I don't know. I just think it's so cute. The person at Larder was like, you just go into Ohio City and talk to them. Like, that's such a Cleveland thing that I really love.
Yeah. And Larder probably buys meat from OCP.
Right. So, end up meeting up with him today and got to buy the piece. And it's such a good feeling, vibrational bookmark, pinnacle of success feeling to get to buy another artist's work and be able to afford it. And
he delivered.
Yes.
And I loved it. So, I mean, I love the art, but I wasn't really in the mindset of I need to buy this because I start getting intimidated about, like, hanging it. And,
right.
And I start thinking long-term, what are we going to do with it?
I wasn't really thinking about it either until Larder was like, it's for sale.
Right.
And then I was like, well, fuck. Might as well ask how much it is, because it was like I had such a strong emotional reaction to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then when Kelly said that she wanted to buy it and it was a price that we could afford, do you want to see how much it was?
I don't know.
Probably not. Well, it was something, it was very affordable. And Kelly doesn't usually like to buy a lot of stuff. Or it's hard. It takes you a long time to come up with something that you want to buy. You're very, very, very... not thrifty, but you just think really hard before you buy something.
Uh-huh.
And you can give it months before you buy something. And then you might need a little prodding. And
I was thinking about, well, there's a lot of work that I like. Maybe I should ask him if I could come look at his studio to make sure I get the one I really love. But I was like, no.
And the fact that she saw it, and then the very next day, or that night, yesterday... right a few hours later is confirming that she's gonna buy it. Like, it's so exciting to me to watch you want to buy something and then buy it. And it's just so cute that that's what you want to buy, is other people's art. It's so inspiring.
Aww.
You're not like coveting. I mean, you covet shoes sometimes, but for very practical reasons.
I need my tabby.
So the fact that you had such a strong desire to buy it, like, I didn't even think twice about the expense, because I know if you really want it that bad, that it's a good buy.
Wow, it's a buy. That's so cool.
You never buy something the same day you see it. Ever.
That's funny. What? I'm a Taurus.
So we got to buy this painting, and
such a good feeling. It's just such a taste of things to come. Like, I am so inspired by my art history book. What I really think I think my ultimate dream is to, like, have a gallery and to represent a bunch of artists.
Really?
Yeah.
That's your dream.
Uh-huh.
Cool. Wow. Interesting.
That sounds fun.
Okay. Cool. But she was telling me how Elaine de Kooning, mm-hmm. right, always was very supportive of her artist friends and would buy their work, and she was just a very generous person, like, helping a person who's trying to mug her. And it just gave me so much perspective on... I mean, I know the lesson that you have to give to get, and I know that you got to let your money go and spend it. And it's not like it's hard for me to spend money, but it's just so... It's such a good feeling to support someone by buying their art.
I agree.
With no middleman.
Yes. I was so inspired by Elaine de Kooning, too. She's definitely one of my new idols. Like, she all, like you just said, like she was very generous and all, and believed, never worried about where her next money or whatever was going to come from, because she truly believed and knew that that the more you gave, the more you received, and she lived by that.
That's so cool.
I know, it's so inspiring. And she also was like just very, like energetically very much the heart of that scene, and everyone loved her. And it was because not that she just gave in every way, and she gave like she was just so kind to everyone, and she always tried to help everyone, and she was just tuned in, tapped in, turned on.
Hell yeah.
And people were drawn to that. And right. she always did her, you know?
Was she the one that went to ABQ?
Mm-hmm.
Side note.
All right, well, you want to take a break?
I'd only want to take one break if that's possible, because what? I didn't download any other ads. So
okay,
I'm
that's
cool
fine.
For another 10 minutes if you are.
I really want to take a break and fix this leaning ass table.
It's just because my legs are on it.
Okay, well.
It doesn't matter.
I have to pee.
Oh. Okay, get ready for a solid 40 minutes.
All right, well, how was your meal?
Excellent.
Great. That'll be $10.20.
Okay.
Darn it.
What's wrong?
Oh, this stinking POS always freezes up.
You should try Business Payment Services.
I already have a theater degree.
No, no, no. Business Payment Services is the new way that small businesses are taking credit cards.
What?
Imagine a point-of-sale system that prides itself on benefiting the merchant and the customer.
How?
BPS uses software and equipment that are all tied together. That way, the merchant has 24/7 access to detailed reports, employee profiles, and most of all, fast and dependable sales every time.
Oh, but customers always hate those surcharges.
That's what's so cool. There's no transaction fee, so you're able to keep your prices low. Everybody wins.
That's actually pretty cool.
More and more businesses are choosing Business Payment Services every day.
I can see why.
And their customer service? Fantastic.
I definitely need to check out Business Payment Services.
Awesome. Well, have a good day.
You too. Thanks a lot. Hey, wait. Hey, you haven't paid yet. Bring it back here.
Visit bpshq.com or call 877-623-2021 and get your business set up for tomorrow, today.
Welcome back to the fun show.
Should we tell them about our escapades now?
Yeah. I'm kind of over the whole story now.
I know. That's why I wanted to tell it the other day.
We told too many people.
I know. We've told the story too many times.
It's done.
Wow.
It's that's 50 sad. Degrees out. We can't be talking about ice anymore. It's about to be barch. But
hello,
I did.
Barch.
I did want to talk about something that I've been saving up to talk to you about.
Okay.
From Byron Katie.
Okay.
So I've told you about her process, the work.
Mm-hmm.
Judge your neighbor, write it down, ask for questions, turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
So the last part, I guess I'll go through it real quick, the four questions. Judge your neighbor. So you write down, this person should do this, for example. Then you ask four questions. Is it true? Can you really know it's true? How do you feel when you believe that thought? Who would you be without that thought? Then turn it around. And if you say, this person should do something, you turn it to, I should do something, or this person shouldn't do something. You just turn it into the opposite in whatever way you can. It's not set in stone what way to do it, but there's just a lot of different perspectives to see based on your judgment. And what I wanted to tell you is a different turnaround that I read, because I'm reading like four of her books right now, skimming them anyway, to look for new techniques she hasn't mentioned before. And okay, I'm gonna have to use a personal example, and it's gonna involve you. But I only have one neighbor, and it's you.
Acting like she just has to use this example.
Well, I don't have a whole lot of other
I don't people. Even know what it is. I can just tell by the way she's looking, it's going to be something that's going to bring shame to the family.
No, it's not that bad. Okay. Here's the example. The hair trap in the shower.
Okay.
Okay. So I was going to take a shower and the hair trap was on the side of the tub and it was full of hair. Maybe 2 days ago. And I'm not going to say any blame, but I did have the thought that you should clean it. And, you know, like feeling like I shouldn't have to clean it. You should clean it because you took the last shower. So, and I'm whenever I'm like not in the best mood, at least the last week or two, I'm trying to do this work and like really look at my thoughts like, does this really work? Do I really need to like spend this paragraph of thinking to deal with one single thought of you should clean the hair trap? And so I had the thought she should clean it. And then I go through the questions. Is it true? Yes. How can I know that's really true? I can't know it's really true. Like, there's a reason that you didn't, and it's so that I could talk to you now about this example. Like, there's it's not true because you didn't do it. How do I feel when I believe that? I feel, like, annoyed or put upon or whatever. And then... who would you be if you didn't believe that thought? Or who would you be without that thought? I would just go about my day and not think about it and not make it into a thing. And then finally turn it around. First of all, I should clean the hair trap. Okay, fine. Because she says in the book, like, if you aren't willing to do the thing you're telling the person to do, then you're no better than them. Not that it's, like, better, but, like, you're not willing to do it either, so why would you expect them to do it? And then,
as if I did it on purpose. No, like, I'm not.
I know.
Fuck that. Like, it's I'm just not gonna clean it.
It's a minor example. It's all the only thing I have. This is the level of intricacy of my contrast. This is
why
this
we
is
the need
problem
to leave the
I
house.
Have. Yes,
this is why.
That's my biggest problem.
This is why the sun makes such a difference.
So, what I had read is that the other turnaround you can do is replace the thing you're talking about with thinking. So I say she should clean the hair trap, but then you could turn it around to I should clean the hair trap. And then you take it one step further. I should clean my thinking. And that thinking is a substitute for pretty much anything that someone else is doing wrong. And so you can use this, like, pretty much any example that you come up with, that this person should do this. If you put thinking in there, like, I should clean my thinking.
Interesting. Very.
And I love that because that's...
Are you sure it wasn't I should thinking the hair trap?
I should think this hair trap. I think should hair trap.
I thinking hair trap.
The hair trap is thinking.
How do you know what you're supposed to substitute? What if thinking should clean the hair trap?
Exactly. And so that's how you know none of these thoughts are true. But as soon as I started applying that, because her example was like someone had a drug addicted daughter and she's like, my daughter should not be addicted to drugs. And then she turned it to, I should not be addicted to thinking. And it was like her thinking about her daughter was her own addiction.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So anything that you're judging about someone, you can apply it to your thinking. And which is funny when you bring it down to like things with cleaning or like upkeep or...
Right.
Because...
Not respecting the common area. What's that about? Well, still
we'd have to start over.
It's still having to do with tidying, cleaning.
Like, she should clean the common area. Right. I should clean my thoughts.
Yeah, exactly.
It's my common thoughts.
Right.
Which does make sense. Like, thoughts you think over and over, or thoughts that you think while you're in the... You know, there's just so many ways you can look
or
at
like,
it.
Or, like, what about... They should shovel their sidewalks. Mm. Is that the same thing?
I should shovel my thoughts.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, clean
Same
them up,
thing,
move
clean.
Them out of the way.
Right.
And it always comes down to it's your thinking that's causing you suffering, and it has nothing
right.
to do with them. Because it's your attention and you believing untrue thoughts that's causing you suffering. And so ultimately the solution with the drug addicted daughter was like, you need to love her and leave her alone. Like, right. You need to deal with your thinking.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Before, like, because it's like, who are you when you believe this thought, or how do you feel? And the mom's like, I'm horrible. I shut her out. I'm mean to her. Like, her thinking in this way caused her to act in a way that was also detrimental to the whole situation.
Right.
So when you turn it around to, I should clean my thinking or whatever, it's so empowering. Like, oh, of course, my thoughts are dirty. I don't want to be thinking these thoughts.
Yeah, it's good.
And it's not like you have to scrub your thoughts or try not to think. It's about just being able to look at your thoughts and let them go, knowing that they're not true, not getting caught up and right. identified with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
a really good one. Yeah, thanks.
I really like it as a technique that, of course, I have to take responsibility every right. single fucking
we
time.
We should, I know, it gets old. Like, we should do a worksheet about that, though. It's a really good, simple one.
I know. I've been wanting to make some work about Byron Katie, but it's like, how do you do it without just ripping her off? Because her whole thing is worksheets and this process. But I'm sure there's some...
Yeah, it makes sense.
There's something we can extrapolate from it.
But, well, it's all about the model that you give people for the idea, you know? It's like... Like any worksheet that we make that would be based off of someone else's ideas, like how are we saying, like we just give a different model for comprehension.
Yeah, and make it more visual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so that still really on my BK one. Kick.
Okay, so my turn to tell you about the thing I've been holding out to tell you.
Let's hear it.
Okay, so... I'm back on my Neville Goddard shit. I needed it. First, I took a break from it because it was like, it's kind of the same stuff over and over. So it was like, okay, I need to forget this and then remember it again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so good. I'm so glad I went back to it. But, okay, this blew my mind. So he's talking about this universal law of reversibility. Now... I don't know if, you know, like, if this is, like, a real law or whatever, like, something that he's just talking about kind of...
Did he just make it up?
That's what, I don't know, yeah, I don't know. But it makes sense to me, scientifically,
okay.
as a non-scientist. Okay. So, okay. I'm just going to have to read this paragraph.
Read it.
Mechanical motion caused by speech was known for a long time before anyone dreamed of the possibility of an inverse transformation, that is, the reproduction of speech by mechanical motion, the phonograph. For a long time, electricity was produced by friction without ever a thought that friction, in turn, could be produced by electricity. Whether or not man succeeds in reversing the transformation of a force, he knows, nevertheless, that all transformations of force are reversible. If heat can produce mechanical motion, so mechanical motion can produce heat. If electricity produces magnetism, magnetism too can develop electric currents. If the voice can cause undulatory currents, so can such currents reproduce the voice, and so on. Cause and effect, energy and matter, action and reaction are the same and interconvertible. This law is of the highest importance because it enables you to foresee the inverse transformation once the direct transformation is verified. If you knew how you would feel were you to realize your objective, then inversely, you would know what state you could realize were you to awaken in yourself such feeling. Sorry, I have to skip ahead a little bit here. If your realized prayer produces in you a definite feeling or state of consciousness, then inversely, that particular feeling or state of consciousness must produce your realized prayer. Because all transformations of force are reversible, you should always assume the feeling of your fulfilled wish.
Love it.
Saying that scientifically it must happen.
Right. That, well, right, I don't know if that's a real law. Like, is there something that's well, not reversible?
It makes sense what he said about the other stuff, like electricity producing magnetism in the reverse, and like force creating friction.
Right. Like, kind of like the mystic law of cause and effect. It's that cause and effect arise at the same time.
Right. Okay, it says, okay, if a physical fact can produce a psychological state can produce a physical fact.
Wow, I really, like, resist that as true, but I want to believe that. I mean, I know
I it's... mean, it is true, right? Wouldn't yeah. you say that it is true?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely want that to be true. That's good. I like that. Yes.
It's wild, right?
It's amazing.
Like, I just never really thought about it that way. Like, it makes total sense. If, because there's always that give and take with the energy, right? And if
right.
everything is energy, then there's always like he said, like, if this experience can create a psychological effect within my mind or my being, mm-hmm. then the opposite would have to be true.
Right. Yeah. That's a good science to back up the feeling as the secret idea.
Right. Right, because it makes sense on in all those other aspects. Like, I'm pretty sure that's true, what he said.
I can't think of any examples that wouldn't be.
Right. And there's always, like, so with any force or any direction of energy or change in the energy.
Right. Because they're, like, two sides of the same coin. So if you see one side, the other side is there.
Right. It would have to be.
Right. Interesting. I'm so glad you reminded me the feeling is the secret.
Oh, I know. Isn't it just the best?
Oh, it's such a relief.
I know. Yes. No, it makes life so easy.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like, is this really real? Like, if I'm not feeling the best, like, really, am I going to have to drum up some mood there's no evidence to make me feel this way? Yes. Which, going back to BK, I got to tell you an example in my experience that I think is connected. So, in one of her books, sorry, I don't know which one, she says that after you do the inquiry for a while of asking if each thought is true, that naturally you start to perform the inquiry as your thoughts arise, and that the ultimate shortcut that starts happening to you is that every single thought you think ends with a question mark instead of a period. So that's like the inquiry shortcut is she should clean the hair trap. That should be the ultimate goal, that you're questioning each thought as it arises. And so The biggest challenge for me is just paying attention to my thoughts, which is the work period for anyone, is mm-hmm. to know what you're thinking, to be present enough to watch your thoughts. That's the whole point in practice. So that's the hard part, is like not getting so lost in my thoughts that I don't know what I'm thinking anymore, or I don't know that I am thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So the technique that I use, that I don't know if she specifically said it, but many teachers like Tolle, Byron Katie, Wayne Dyer, they'll say the best thing you can do is say yes to what is, not fight what is. Mm-hmm. So the technique that I like to use is, yes, I'm sitting in this bed. Yes, I'm recording the fun show. And like describing details of what's going on to get me present, and then I'm able to like notice when I have a thought because I'm paying attention. So yes, I'm sitting in the bed. Yes, I'm wondering if Kelly is interested in what I'm talking about.
I am.
But just like these are, it's my technique to notice the thoughts arising. Right. Otherwise, if I'm not constantly paying attention, obviously I don't notice the thoughts arising and I get identified with them. So at first, and this technique has worked for me many times before I even started reading BK, because I heard it in Tolle probably. And so yesterday at the dentist, I was really trying to use this technique because I wasn't in a great mood, but I wanted to know if this technique would work if I'm not in a good mood already, to like stay, to get me present, and then like what happens. So on the walk to the dentist, I would just say, yes, I'm walking down the street. Yes, I'm walking down the sidewalk. Yes, I'm wondering about something. I don't remember all the details, but then when I got to the dentist and was in the chair, I was still doing it. Yes, I'm sitting in this chair. Yes, she's cleaning my teeth. Yes, I'm listening to the other dentist talk to Kelly. Yes, and on and on and on, just trying to narrate this experience.
Yes, I'm walking through these huge-ass motherfucking puddles.
Yes, yes. So just keeping this constant narration. And it like it doesn't feel that fun or mind-blowing in the moment of it happening at first, because it feels so mundane, like, oh, paying attention to walking through these puddles, paying attention to sitting in this dentist chair, like, can something happen? And, but, so I kept it up, like, the whole dentist visit, and then once we stepped out of the dentist office, I had such a feeling of refreshment, and, like, a whole new, like, my vision was born anew. And we had to decide, are we going to just go straight home, or are we going to turn and check out these restaurants and, you know, do something fun? And right away when we're making the choice, I'm like, yes, let's just at least go walk down that street. So right. In my mind, I have the word yes going, being yes, open to opportunity. Yes, let's go check this out. Like being in that mode of saying yes made me automatically more open to new experiences. And what I'm trying to get at is that my mood was significantly boosted by staying present, paying attention to all the minutiae instead of getting lost in my thoughts. And it was the first time that I can concretely remember doing that practice, and then it like paid off in my mood. But I wasn't doing it to pay off in my mood. I was just doing it to like escape the torture of getting lost in thought. So that technique really it like set off like a chain reaction of minor miracles or major to us in the moment.
Oh yeah.
Just being open to, yes, I will go towards the restaurants instead of towards home. And I'm only realizing this now and telling you that it had made me much more open, when to me in the moment of experience, I was just feeling energized because I wasn't ruminating on whatever, you know, thinking about what I'm going to do later, thinking about dreading something.
I was going to say, might have had a little to do with the fact that you weren't at the dentist anymore.
For sure. But that helped me like be at the dentist and like not think it was bad. It was fine. I was happy to be there.
You said yes to so much. You said yes to going in that pop-up.
Yeah.
And you said yes when I kept on wanting to add desserts to the order.
Yes. Yeah, it really did get me in a mode of saying yes. And I know that a lot of, I don't know if a lot of people do this, but when I, like in my meditation videos, if I talk about saying yes to what is, or being in a mode of saying yes, like the first thing that comes to people's minds is like, well, what if someone offers me drugs, or what if I want to say no? Or
definitely say yes to the drugs.
But it's like, it's not about saying yes when you want to say no to a question.
Right.
It's about sitting there. Yes, yeah, someone's asking me a question.
It's accepting. Yeah.
Yes, I'm wondering what I think about this. Yes, I'm going to give an answer. It's not about answering yes to every literal question.
You take everything so literally.
Right.
But it kind of is. I mean, sometimes saying no is saying yes, but it is, a lot of it is saying yes to, like, for example, when people ask us to do stuff and we're always like, no, but then we end up saying yes because we're like, we're not going to say no.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Like, you have to really know that the answer is no to say no.
And then it's a yes because you're saying yes to yourself.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's, yeah, like, but that's not really what you're talking about. You're talking about just saying yes to everything, like, just accepting everything that is. Like, we talked about before how you just can't escape what is, so you say yes to it.
Right. And that it's like the mind instantly wants to be like, I can't say yes to it because that means I want it and it will stay. When actually the opposite is true. When you accept, you allow things to flow on and you don't keep them pinned there with your attention of wanting them to go.
Right.
So I really liked that. I loved that experience of being at the dentist. And like, it was like I stayed in the flow because I wasn't letting my thoughts drag me down. And I'm just really trying to stay in the practice of basically narrating myself to myself so that I know what's going on. I know what I'm thinking. I know how I'm reacting to things. It's just a really cool technique to stay present. And also, like, if you don't feel good, and one thing BK says is the feeling bad is an indicator you're thinking a thought that feels bad, and the feeling will give you the alarm that you need to look at your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so, thoughts are so loud, it's hard to see them.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
And just
it's just giving you the alarm, like when you're feeling stressed.
Exactly, you're thinking stressful thoughts.
Right, you need to shovel your thoughts
out of your mind.
Can I just melt them instead?
these thoughts should melt.
Right?
Yeah, so that was really cool. It was a really good, like, success that the sustained focus on doing that for like an hour and a half paid off for the next 24 hours or more. Like, I woke up feeling good today, and not that I don't usually wake up feeling good, but I almost always get caught in a pattern of like, I have to do these chores, I don't want to do these chores, or I have to, just thinking about what I quote unquote have to do and how I don't want to do it.
Hmm.
Is my morning pattern.
Wow.
Which is just a lack of focus, because I know in my heart, like, if I question those thoughts, they are wrong because I do want to do these things. It's just the habitual resistance of the mind.
I've been working on my Cult of Counting workbook for 3 days.
Hell yeah.
But I did want to, I mean, similarly, talking about focus and just not getting caught. What did you say? I need to, she was, her addiction, her own addiction was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't be addicted to thinking, you know, like, that's really what it is.
Yes.
But anyway, so I started my Cult of Counting journal because I just finished a Beyond Manifestation journal and I wanted to switch it up. So I decided to do Cult of Counting. And the first day, I'm like, okay, it's good. Like, it's a good, it really brought a lot of attention to my thought, like, what the junk in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that was good. And then the second day, it was like, okay. I was like, I don't want to really do this. And, like, I kind of had to force myself to do it. And it wasn't great. I wasn't really feeling it, but I pressed on because, like, I want the effects, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, I know it's like, it's not the mantra, it's the devotion to the mantra. Your level of devotion to the focus or whatever work you're doing, mm-hmm. to, you know, so it's like, okay, well, what you put into it, you're gonna get out of it. So I'm like, I'm just gonna do it. I'm gonna push through it because it's a practice, it's a fitness, mm-hmm. you know.
You're and right, so right. and you're just I a little out of shape.
Exactly. precisely. And it was like, I could feel it clicking in more and more. And then, so the next day, which was yesterday, I wanted to do it. I looked forward to it. I wanted the feeling already. It felt like, it's just like working out. Like the first day it's like, okay, yeah, I'm doing something for myself. This is good. Second day, okay, I gotta do this again.
I have to do this every day.
And then it's like, okay, well, it's only day two, so like, I'm not gonna quit. And then it's like, by the end of your workout, you're like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm glad I did that. And then, you know, the next day it's like, okay, I already feel like I'm in way better shape than I was on day one.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels good. And I, like, similarly, I mean, of course, miracles are always flowing for us, but it was, I mean, it did coincide perfectly that I started my numbers and shit's going really well for me.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
You know?
Right. Because you're not mudding around in your thoughts, creating pain for yourself.
And also, I've been reading this Neville Goddard right alongside it, and remembering that it's how you feel when you do the mental code that really is the key that unlocks it. Like, you could be sitting there counting and still feel like shit and still feel stressed out.
But that would mean you're counting and thinking at the same time.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. Like, you could just sit there, like, resentfully doing the numbers.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
But I know what you
but
mean.
But then you would be thinking simple thoughts about sense. The numbers.
Makes sense. Yeah, you're right.
But, yeah.
But still, like, if you also focus on how you feel, while you, like, you can control how you feel while you do it, you know?
Right.
Like, if you're, like, I know that I can sit there and feel really good and be like, yes, this is, just like Neville says, like, okay, I know that this feeling is producing a physical experience for me, so I'm going to sit here and feel this feeling, and then that produces a good feeling from the knowledge that how you feel is going to create.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And, like, with the saying yes thing, how I was like, oh, it feels like it's not really doing anything, but, you know, what I wasn't doing was suffering anymore.
Right.
So I actually was, like, hugely boosting myself up the emotional scale. It wasn't into, like, bliss and joy, but it was from depression and anger into neutrality.
Right.
Which is all people want I mean, that's what Abraham would say the point of meditation is, to just feel neutral. Right. And from there, that's all you need, because that reveals the natural, your natural state. If you can clear away all of that negativity. But this all brings us full circle into you spilling your coffee on your cult of counting
journal. I know, and then you didn't want to talk about the ice capades.
But this now is a natural flow into the ice capades, since it's relevant to our conversation.
Yes.
On Sunday, was that the second day you did it, your numbers, or the first day?
I think it was the first.
Oh my gosh.
She gets started the notebook.
She gets this brand new Cult of Counting journal out and spills her entire cup of coffee.
Oh, the journal was the least of it.
It was all over. Like, it was a big mess, and we had to do all this.
Soaked through the top blanket, the second blanket, the first sheet, the second sheet, the third sheet, the mattress fucking liner thing, the other mattress liner thing, the fucking mattress, the fucking my journal, my beanie, my
how did it even happen?
I don't know, Margo.
So she spills this whole cup of coffee on Sunday, and
the carpet, the wood on the table, my slippers.
was everywhere. And it was, I mean, things, big messes don't really happen like that in our house. We're pretty careful, I would say. So it was a pretty outstanding incident. And it just so happened that because of the timing with the spilling of the coffee.
Because I had to do laundry before we left and make the bed and everything before we left on our excursion.
Yeah, we were going to take a walk to the lake, and we would have left maybe an hour earlier if she hadn't had to go through all of this cleaning up of the mess. And then we got to the lake, and the lake is not totally frozen over, but it's completely, from the shore to about a mile out, it's ice.
Further than a mile. But anyway.
So the lake is totally frozen, and we get to the edge of the lake. You can't really see it from you can't see the shore from the park. You have to go to the very edge of the park to look down into the lake. And we see there's all these people walking on the lake. Dozens of people walking on the deep
more than dozens
lanes.
Like it's really hard to describe how surreal it was, because it's like, okay, so there's this one part that's adjacent to the beach that has these huge rocks, and so typically, you know, Lake Erie has waves, and a lot of times those waves slapping up against those rocks are enormous, and it's a very scary, like, you would never want to be down there,
never.
And not to mention, it wouldn't even be like possible really to climb down there. I mean, it would be so. Anyway, there's all these people out there, we're like, this is so surreal. So we go out there.
It was like being in a dream. It was like that movie that I really like, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, when they go to Montauk in the winter.
Yes, it was so fun. But okay, so we're there and it's fun and everyone's having fun. This guy's riding his bike and it's a blast. But everyone's commenting about these people that are really, really, really far out on the lake. And they were like at least a mile and a half. Some of these people were out. And everyone's commenting how far away they are, and we're asking each other how they got across this moat, because there's like this, it looks like there's a break in the ice and there's these people that are on the other side of it. And we're like, okay, well, you know, like, I really thought it was a mirage or something. I'm like, something, there's, I mean.
Yeah, we're not thinking very critically about it. We're just right. Like, wow, that doesn't seem very smart, but right. They must know what they're doing.
Right. So we leave, and no sooner do we climb up back up over the rocks, then ambulance pulls up, and we're like, oh God, what happened? Like, did someone hit a tree sledding or something? Like, and then there's like a fire truck, and then there's another fire truck, and then there's another fire truck and another fire truck. We're like, what the fuck's going on? And so it turns out that the ice had broken out there where we saw that moat. Oh my goodness. A huge piece of the ice just separated from the, and 10 people were trapped out there.
On an ice floe, the side, like the ice floe, the like piece of ice that broke off the shore ice must have been miles wide and miles deep. Not miles deep, but like it was more than a mile wide. It was more than you could visually see.
Right.
And so this chunk of ice that breaks off is bigger than the eye can see, but it still is straight up broken off the shore ice, and you cannot come back.
No, they were floating away. Like, the firemen and the Coast Guard, like, I don't know what they were doing, but they took so long, and the people were just floating further and further and further. It was so scary, but
they did end up getting rescued, all 10 people.
Yes.
But it was just like the coffee spilling on the walk home. I had to say to Kelly, thank you for spilling your coffee, because we got to witness this situation.
Right. And we got to make it out on the ice before that all went down. We got to have a good time without it being tainted with the idea of like, this ice is about to blow. It's about to break off.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever do it again. The timing was so magical that we got to experience it and then witness why you should never do that again.
And this has been the fun show.
Go to schooloflifedesign.com. Thanks for listening. ShadyPinesRadio.com. I'm talking over the end.
You can never be sure just where you're going. And memory is a fleeting thing. But you can always know exactly where you are. Shady Pines Radio. You've always been invited, and now you're here.